You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits or join the Facebook discussion groups www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Dom Smith at number 6, and I honestly hate myself a little bit more for doing that. I think he is, when we're talking about fat tubs of lard with somebody like Vogelbach.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I mean, the biggest thing I just took away from what you said is you're building a computer, like, from scratch.
Yeah, it's not that hard. It's not that impressive.
Whoa,
don't.
What? Excuse me?
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Not even that fat. He's 185.
Oh, that's not true.
Yeah, he's bigger than that. Watch video of him. He's not 185 anymore.
He's a Pablo Sandoval looking fucker.
Oh, really? And he's going to hit about 15 homers a year. So
we are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome in. Another edition of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Werner, and with me today is our lead prospect analyst, Matt Thompson. Matt, hello, sir.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Doing well. I'm actually pretty pumped for this episode, actually.
Yeah, well, we have a newcomer on the show, and we'll introduce him here in a minute. And I was telling him, I think these prospect positional things only get better from here because we're giving them a tough welcoming with catchers and first baseman today. But hey, it's got to get covered, right?
Yes, we'll get to what this episode's about and everything. But let's bring in our new guy, our new Friends with Fantasy Benefits contributor, Mr. Andy Anderson. Hello, how are you doing, man?
Hey, how's it going? I have to tell everybody right off the bat, it's not a fake name. I get it all the time. I swear, I can show you my license. It's a real name.
I was actually kind of wondering that. I was like, maybe it is like a fake name. Maybe he doesn't want to. Maybe he wants to be, real professional and not have his work find out that he's doing a fantasy baseball podcast. But I'm glad you made that clarification because I was wondering.
Well, a lot of people think I'm in witness protection, so I have to sort of let everyone know I haven't witnessed the murder and all that.
That would be a name our government comes up with, too.
Sure,
your name is Andy Anderson. So.
All right, but I'm excited. I'm very excited. I'm very green. I'm very new, but I am pumped to get into this.
Well, yeah, we're happy to have you. Give the listeners just a little brief overview of yourself and what you do at Friends with Fantasy Benefits and what we can kind of expect from you this season.
So, like I said, I'm pretty new. There's this sort of fun thing going on with my desk where half of it is fantasy baseball and the other half is this new computer I'm building. Fantasy baseball is my life. It literally consumes everything I'm doing. And it's really great that Valentine's Day comes before the fantasy season so my girlfriend doesn't get too upset. I absolutely adore everything about fantasy baseball. And as we were talking earlier before the podcast started, you have to look at prospects now. It's something you got to do. So hopefully with these podcasts, we can get to know some of these maybe lower range catchers and first basemen, specifically with this one. And more specifically with me, with my articles, I want to sort of look into how people are rising and falling throughout their year values and their year auction statistics. So that's what you're going to be getting from me, hopefully this year, consistently.
I mean, the biggest thing I just took away from what you said is you're building a computer, like, from scratch?
Yeah, it's not that hard. It's not that impressive.
Whoa,
don't.
What? Excuse me? You just saying that, like it's nothing is automatically means that you're smarter than anybody that's ever been on this show. So congratulations already.
Like I said to Matt, I got you fooled, too. It's really not that hard. Don't paint me out as some techie guy. It's not that hard.
I'm trying to think of the last thing I built. I think it was a table from IKEA, and I think it took me, 5 hours. So, yeah, you got me beat.
Maybe you had the instructions upside down. That's usually.
They're probably in Swedish.
Yeah, that, or that, too, yeah.
If you think of like your prototypical handyman, I'm the complete opposite. So that's okay. Me in a nutshell.
Yep, me too. Me too.
It's not pretty. Where can people follow you on Twitter, Andy?
People can follow me on Twitter at, let me make sure I got this right, because I have two Twitter accounts because you know I'm so important.
You have your like computer building, you know, Twitter account, and then your, you know, regular Friends of Fantasy Benefits one.
Yeah, so you can follow me at ABA Anderson FWFB.
Awesome.
Ooh. Shout out.
Yes, I mean, we appreciate the FWFB at the end. It kind of is a little signature for us that work here, so it's nice to have. Matt, where can everybody reach you nowadays?
MD Top FWFB, and I want to give a shout out to all those prospect pods that me and Justin did. So go listen to those when you're done with this.
Yeah, yes, congratulations on getting through those. That's a lot. I know you had some personal things going on as well, so it's, you know, I know it's really hard to, you know, do all this stuff while you're, you know, having to deal with stuff in your personal life, but we appreciate you doing all that.
No, man, I love doing it. It's there, and then after you, or as you're listening to the podcast, if you're available, go onto the website and pull up the team by team top tens. Those are what got delayed the most with everything in the family stuff. But I'm working on your Rays now, Mike. Your Rays will be up today, so as in Wednesday night, and then the final team, the Blue Jays, will be up on Thursday. So.
I appreciate you doing the Rays. I did disagree with a few things you guys did on the show, you and Justin, but it's okay. I mean, it's everybody's, you know, got their own opinions, and that's fine. Speaking about prospects, before we get into the show actually about prospects, please rate and review the podcast. You can do that on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, any of the podcast aggregators that, you know, let you listen to the show. We really appreciate that. If you give us a 5-star review, you can send that to @FantasyBenefits on Twitter or friendswithfantasybenefits@gmail.com, and we'll get you entered into a listener league this season. Also, follow Justin Mason on Twitter @JustinMasonFWFB. He's kind of our, you know, leader, co-founder type guy, and he also can help you out in terms of getting into the listener leagues and such, so give him a quick follow on Twitter as well. And talking about prospects, that's what we're doing here. And that's, I know you, if you're listening, you have probably kept up with the shows, which is impressive in itself. Bravo. But each day of the week, we're going to kind of do a different version of the podcast. And on Thursdays, we are going to do a prospect show. And that's going to be with myself, Matt, and Andy weekly. Sometimes we might change things up. And, you know, depending on, you know, the wave of news or what's going on in the minor leagues, we might, you know, delay or, you know, even make another one if that's the case. But at least for now, we're going to go weekly. And what we're going to do, at least to start off in the preseason here, is we're going to go through our top 10 catching prospects and our top 10 first base prospects from a fantasy angle going into 2017. We're trying to keep up with the positional previews that we're doing on the main podcast as well. So we're going to kind of make up one of the positions going with two this week, but we should stay on track with the main show as we go forward. The format, all of us have a top 10 list of each position, and we're going to go through each one from 10 down. And after that, we're going to give a few honorable mentions, but it should just give a little bit of a landscape of the, you know, prospects from each of these positions and help you out in terms of what you're looking for from these positions going into your fantasy drafts and dynasty drafts, etc. So I'm pretty stoked about it. How about you guys?
Oh, man, you know I love this stuff. No, you know I'm all in. I was on mute for a second there. You know I'm all in on this stuff, man. I probably have an unhealthy obsession, I'll admit, with prospects and fantasy baseball in general as it is. So anytime I can talk and flood people's ears with nonsense and facts, I'm going to do it. So I'm in.
Yeah, I always surprise people by telling them that I have an MILB account, because who has an MILB account? Nobody. Nobody watches.
I do.
You do? Well, see, you're crazy like me, and I like that.
Somebody that can build computers has an MLB account. That's the justification to do it in itself. Let's start this off. All right, so number one catcher for you in, you know, at least in the prospect realm right now for fantasy, Matt, tell us.
It's close. I have these guys grouped pretty close together, these four of them, but it's Jorge Alfaro for me.
How about you, Andy? What do you
Yeah, ask? I agree. It is close, but I don't see any other person who has the pedigree of what we look for when we talk about a young, good catcher.
All right, and I'm a little bit different at number one. I have Tom Murphy, so I'm going to let you guys kind of expound on Jorge Alfaro a bit before I kind of give my thoughts. So, Matt, give your reasoning as to why you have Alfaro up top.
Yeah, okay. Well, number one, Alfaro is extremely unusual for a catching prospect on the offensive profile, meaning, I guess let's start with the defense first, because this is catcher, so this actually matters a lot, probably the most of any of them. The defensive skills vastly improved. Before last season, there was talk of him moving from the position. Now it seems a near certainty that he's going to stay there. Cameron Rupp is not going to be an obstacle for Alfaro this season. Rupp's got the job this year. Andrew Knapp is another guy that's going to be in the way, but it's Alfaro's job ultimately. And the thing is, I don't think he's going to hit for a lot of average, which is that's fine going into it. He's not going to walk a lot, so in OBP leagues, that's going to hurt him a little bit there. But what he is going to make up for it, he's going to hit some pop, probably low 20s home runs at his peak years. Catchers take forever to develop, so take that for what it's worth. But he is going to make up for it a little bit with the unusual stolen bases he's going to provide you from the catching spot. So it's going to be a nice profile. He's super young. Alfaro, I mean, he had a nice season. He actually reached the major leagues last year in a little cameo in September, which was kind of strange. I didn't expect that, but I mean, in 97 games over in Double A Redding, he hit .285, .325, slugged .458 with 15 homers. So I do like the profile a lot, and he's got a cannon for an arm. So give me Alfaro with the arm and the pop.
Before we get your thoughts on Alfaro, Andy, I just want to know, how high is the actual upside in terms of stolen bases for Alfaro? Because he hasn't been that successful in the minor leagues in terms of stealing, and he's not that fast. So I don't really see stolen bases being a part of his game.
He's a little bit athletic. I mean, I would say about 8 to 12.
All right. I can maybe buy that, but it's something that I'm not penciling into his profile, at least right now. Andy, give me your thoughts on Jorge Alfaro and why you have him up top.
So I think pretty much Matt summed it up nicely. One of the things that I liked was that we see that the 2-3-4, which is sort of like this hidden code that we have in fantasy sports with the 2-3-4 average, OBP, and slugging. But what was amazing was the OPS was sky high. It was really high at those 97 games. I also especially like the extra base hits. I mean, he's got an eye. You know, we've had problems with swinging too much. He's got a very aggressive swing, and that's part of what we see with the low average. But really, for me, it was the dedication, the showing that he can go from, he's probably going to move from catcher to, you know, I think he threw out 44% of base runners last year. And as far as the steals go, I mean, when you draft steals at a catcher position, it's sort of all like biscuits and gravy. It's all extra. If you have to sort of throw him in a bracket with catchers and steals, you can probably say he'll get the same amount as JT Realmuto, who people are like really hitting on this year. But I actually think JT Realmuto had one of the best years as a catcher last year, and we'll probably have the same this year.
He was a top five guy, and I will continue to beat the drum on Realmuto because I loved him going into last year. I continue to love him. He's my boy. As far as Alfaro goes, I like him a lot, and he's actually my number two guy on this list. So obviously I think the world of him, and I think he's going to be a stellar major league and fantasy catcher whenever he does, you know, kind of hit his peak. In terms of right now, I have Tom Murphy in front, and they're kind of similar. I think both of them can hit for 20-plus home runs in the majors. Obviously, Alfaro is a little more athletic, and you might get some stolen bases out of him. I don't believe in that projection quite yet. But in terms of defense, I think they're both close. Alfaro has the better arm, but Murphy playing in Coors is just a slight edge for me. And the fact that Murphy's going to be up with the Major League squad this year, probably going a bit too high in fantasy drafts, but I do like what Murphy offers. I love the home ballpark, and I love his power profile. He has 20 home runs in three of the last four seasons in the minors. Both of them have, you know, plate skill problems. They both strike out a little bit too much to expect a .260+ batting average year in and year out. But what I'm looking for in fantasy is home runs from a catcher, and both of them can provide that. So I think 1 and 2 for those guys is sound. Murphy's just, again, just slightly ahead for me because of the fact that he's going to start this year in the major leagues, and I know that he's going to play probably the majority of the year in Coors Field. Let's move on to the number two guys for you, since you already know mine at Jorge Alfaro. Andy, who's your number two catcher?
So I have Murphy for essentially the same reasons you listed. I don't see any problems with his track to the major leagues. I think, according to my numbers here, he had a cup of coffee too. Showed nice numbers. But Tom Murphy, he's going to start this year, maybe not as the lead catcher, but very soon. And you're completely right when you say the Coors Field is a big plus for him.
Matt, who's your second guy?
Yep, Murphy. Nothing really much to add. I'm just scared that the Tony Walters experience is going to take away too much from Murphy for me for this year. And then Alfaro and Murphy will both be starters next year. And I'll probably still take Murphy then, but for the next 3 years, I'll take Alfaro.
There is risk, however, though, with Alfaro, that what if Andrew Knapp does work out, even though I can't stand him? Spoiler alert,
he could.
I do not like Andrew Knapp, and I don't even have him listed on my top 10 list. So, spoiler
I do not
alert,
either.
Sorry. But, Cameron Roop's there. They have Andrew Knapp. If those two can work out to a degree, then you could see Alfaro get maybe some first base time, maybe some outfield time, because he is the most athletic of that group. And that's also a risk to me, because if he, for some reason, doesn't get, it's kind of a risk reward, because you like pitchers that don't play at the position, but you also want the guy to get the minimum amount of games played at the position to be able to be eligible for it going into each and every year. I think, the fact that there's really no meaningful guys behind Murphy in the minors to take his job in the next 3 years seems a bit safer to me than somebody like Alfaro, who could get moved off the position entirely if they feel good enough about Knapp and Roop together. Not saying that it's a big chance of happening, but it is risk. So that's just something that I think should be brought up in terms of Alfaro. And it's not really a knock on him. If anything, it's, to a degree, a good thing that he is, versatile and can be playing in the outfield and stuff. But that's just a little knock on him for me, that I think he could eventually get moved off the position entirely if somebody like Knapp does work out, which, again, I can't stand, and I don't think he will. But
yeah, I'm with you. I like that.
Well, so the only thing I would say to that is that it's not like the Phillies have an old guy at first base. We're not dealing with Ryan Howard anymore. We are dealing with Tommy Joseph. So, if they're gonna move him over, that probably won't. That will only increase his value in my mind. It'll save his knees.
It's funny because we just talked about Tommy Murphy on the main show, or Tommy Joseph on the main show, and we just knocked him for how old he looks. I mean, he's obviously only 25, so he doesn't.
Yeah.
He's obviously not old, but we think that he looks like he's 40. So maybe he is going to be moved off, maybe out of the major league sometime in the next 2 years, just based on old age alone. Maybe they'll find a birth certificate like the old Little League World Series players back in the day that were 16 years old and they should be 12. Maybe that's the same thing with Tommy Joseph. He wants to be older. Yoenis Cespedes, he had that same problem. I don't know.
Yeah. Yep. No, a lot of guys did. Yeah, I'm with you.
All right, so let's move on to the number three catcher. Andy, who do you have at number three?
I have Francisco Mejia for Cleveland at number three.
I also have him at number three. Matt, how about you?
So do I.
All right, so let's give just a quick runaround as to why we have him at number three. I'll tell you why personally. Guy's amazing contact skills. 80% or better contact rate at every stop in the minor leagues. He had a 50-game hitting streak last year and had a career-best 0.54 I, which was a strikeout-to-walk ratio. His home run stroke isn't quite there yet, but I do think he has the projection to hit upwards of 20 home runs at peak. I mean, I think he's just well-rounded. I love the guy. I think you could make a case to put him at number one, but the fact that he has a longer, he has a longer time to get to the major leagues, I think pushes him back to the number three spot. But I wouldn't argue with any of you guys if you did have him at number one. Just based on the proximity of the majors, I think that three is the solid spot for him. Andy, what do you think about Francisco Mejia, and why did you put him at number three?
So for essentially the same reasons you said, I'm totally comfortable putting him at number one if this was sort of like a overall, forever. But as far as impact into 2017, he will have none. One of the reasons that I really like him and that you didn't mention was that it seemed like he skipped a step going from handling pitching at high A to, to the double A. It seemed like he's completely ready for it. He's got this sort of really good knack for it. I don't expect him to move anywhere. I expect him to stay behind the plate, but just not in 2017. He won't play in 2017.
How about you, Matt? What do you love about Mejia?
Yeah, it's going to echo a lot of what you guys said, but I mean, I will say he would be number one if I was factoring in overall peak, because I mean, he's still super young. He's 21. He's going to play all of next season at 21 in double A. You would think then by 2019, you're looking at a guy that's going to be major league ready. And I mean, with catching prospects, maybe he's not fantasy relevant then at that point. Who knows? But I do like the hit tool. The hit tool is far superior to any of the two guys we mentioned before, and probably will at any. And I would say is going to be the best of anyone in this position that we're going to mention. Cisco's is close, but not quite there for me. The defensive skills are raw, but they show potential to be plus. He has a laser beam for an arm. He controls the running game already as it is. Like I said, just a little bit rough defensively. But I guess the one knock on Mejia is, yes, I did give him the high hit tool. But you have to, just as soon as recent as 2015, he only hit 243, 324, 345 in the Midwest League. So there is still a little bit of risk here with the youth and the volatility of the catching prospect in general. But I like Mejia a lot, and that's why I got him 3.
Yeah, I think he has a really safe floor in terms of batting average. I'm not worried about that one kind of down season there, because just over and over throughout the minor leagues, at every stop, he's pretty much produced a solid batting average. And even more so, the strikeout-to-walk ratio is just flat-out impressive. And I know you and I, Matt, last season were very, very high on just looking for guys that have really good plate skills. And Francisco Mejia is the guy that demonstrates that better than anybody on this list at catcher, in my opinion, which to me gives him a higher floor and makes him safer in terms of what you can expect in terms of looking at his projectability moving forward. So we all love Mejia. I think, you know, it's hard to juggle between, you know, proximity to the majors and the high upside in terms of long term. You know, it's tough to kind of juggle that when you're looking at and doing lists like this. But at the same time, it's something that we have to do. And I think for 2017, Mejia should be the number 3 guy. Let's look at number 4. Matt, who do you have at number 4 on your catcher list?
Zach Collins.
All right. Andy, who do you have?
I actually have Shane Chisco there at number 4.
All right. And I have Zach Collins as well. So I'm going to let you talk about Chancisco, Andy, and why you have him at number 4, because I have him, you know, listed, what, the next, or number 6, actually. I'll just kind of, you know, spoil that a bit. So why are you a couple spots higher than I am, you would think?
It's going back to that impact we were talking about. He's not old. He's 21, so he's got youth on his side, but he does have good proximity to the league. He's definitely going to start at AAA. Of that, there is no doubt. But who knows? We are slowly seeing the decline of Buster Posey. It's very sad to watch that. But who could you pick if you were going to pick any catcher to grow under? Who better than Buster Posey? So I think they're going to want to bring him up just for that. And learning behind Buster Posey is going to be so great for him. That's why I have him at 4.
Well, it's going to be hard for Cisco to do that because he doesn't play with Buster Posey. He actually plays. Yeah. In Baltimore. But the proximity.
I'm sorry, Matt Wieters.
Well, Wieters might not be back there either, but I get your point. The proximity to the majors is certainly a strong reason to have him at number 4, and he will be in the majors this year. It's just a matter of time in terms of when. But, you know, I can definitely understand that point. Now, Matt, why do you have Zach Collins at number 4? I can give you my reasons, but I'd like to hear yours first.
Well, yours are probably going to be pretty similar to mine. I'm a ceiling whore, and the ceiling for Collins I don't play in any batting average leagues anymore. All my fantasy leagues have skewed toward the on base percentage, and that's even more of a reason to like Collins. I think the way I saw the best comp for Collins, and it's really hard to, I guess I'll put it to you in two ways. I saw the best comp for Collins was like 85% Joey Votto, meaning like basically Yasmani Grandal with 30 points better batting average for a stat line. So that's pretty good, right?
Well, yeah, that's amazing.
And that's ultimate peak count if I saw. But there's obviously the caveat comes with Collins that he's not going to catch. That's the little bit of a risk factored in. If you knew he was going to be a slam dunk, if he was average defensively, he might be my number 1 catcher. That's how much I like to bat. But there's just so much uncertainty with that. But I am happy he's in Chicago because, I mean, the White Sox in the previous years have employed Tyler Flowers, A.J. Pierzynski, Giovanni Soto behind the plate. They don't value catcher defense as high as other organizations seem to. And, I mean, we don't have, if for a fantasy realm, we don't have to have Collins be the everyday catcher. If Collins catches twice a week, that's perfect for us. Because he can catch twice a week, DH, keep the injury risk down, put him at catcher, and he can rake for you. So I love Collins, and I love him in Chicago.
I think Collins is going to catch. And it might not be full time. It might not be 5 days a week. But
it's going to be terrible.
Well, yeah, no, I don't think he's going to be be somebody that does that. But I do think he has enough chops defensively to make it to the major leagues as a part-time catcher with the ability to DH. And that comes to me, at least, if the power plays, it's going to be about 30 home runs. So, well, you know, based on raw projections of what he could be, I think he has the highest fantasy upside possibly of anybody in this group. The fact that the reason I have him at four behind Mejia in particular is because I don't know if he will stay at catcher. And that's, I think, everybody's problem with him. But I'm also, if I was doing a draft right now, I would have no problem taking Collins ahead of anybody on this list based on upside. If I'm just looking for a pure upside catching play, I would go with Collins. I don't think he makes the majors this year, even though his age is advanced enough to do so, and his bat's probably close to ready. But the fact that he is going to probably get a whole year playing defense, getting kind of that stuff refined, I think is great for him. So I think if we revisit this next year, he's going to be the number one catcher on the list because he does okay enough at the catching position in the minor leagues. And then when we're looking towards next season, he's certainly a guy that you can even, you know, pencil in at number 15 in your, you know, in your 2018 fantasy ranks for the actual major leagues, because he should get called up at some point soon and should be a pretty prolific power bat from the catcher position in fantasy from that point forward. So
Two quick things I want to get to jump on that. I agree with most of what you said. I just want to put this in comparison. When Kyle Schwarber was a catcher, I say when because he's not anymore. I'm not convinced that they're ever going to do that again.
they won't.
when he was a catching prospect, there was people thinking, oh, he might be able to stick. He might. With Collins, I don't even hear that. I have not read one source saying that there is a chance he sticks a catcher. Everybody is 100% fully convinced he's moving off the position. Hope for me is that he plays enough to keep the eligibility. The thing that slows me down, but the also risk is for Collins is you shouldn't worry about that much in this realm, because even if he moves off catcher, he's going to jump to – if he stays a catcher, it's going to take longer to get to the bigs, obviously, because it's more to develop. But he has the type of bat that he can play at first base. So you're not going to lose a ton of value there. You're not going to be able to play him at catcher, but if he switches to first base, he can be up in a month, because then he's just focusing on the bat and it'll be fine. So
I watched him probably three or four times last season in college, and I'm not going to sit here and say I'm a scout because I'm not. But based on what I saw in college, he has some decent chops. I'm not going to sit here and say he's, you know, you had your Molina back there, but I do think that he has some decent chops. A full year of getting some defensive coaching should definitely help. I don't think it's completely outrageous to say that he can be a part-time catcher in the majors, which certainly helps us the most in fantasy because he maintains that eligibility. A couple of the outlets that I have looked at have said that it's not out of the question that he catches. So I'm not throwing that out quite yet. I'm going to kind of wait out this season. If we see definitive evidence that they are throwing, I mean, if they stop having to be catcher this year, then he's going to make the majors at some point. That, in my opinion, I think that he can.
No, I agree.
Later on this year as a DH first base type, if they decide to go that way. But again, in my own opinion, I think that he's going to end up coming up probably sometime in mid to late 2018 at catcher, again, part-time, probably get some DH and first base at-bats and have a 30 home run upside and great walk rate. That's something I think gets really underestimated here is while he is going to strike out a bit, and I don't know for certain where his batting average might lie, I want to say it's in the 270 range. It could end up being a 250 profile with great walk rates, because the walk rate, his batting eye is really good. He has some problem with contact, but in OBP formats, which is where fantasy is trending, it doesn't really matter because he does exhibit a really strong ability to walk, and that's going to help you no matter what. Andy, since I'm assuming somewhere soon you have Zach Collins, do you want to give some thoughts on him?
I have him literally right after I have Cisco. I think one of the things that we missed talking about was that the White Sox, they don't seem to be scared, especially when it comes to bringing up prospects. I certainly thought that bringing up Anderson was a mistake. They brought him up real early, but you know, he seemed to do well. They told him steal and he stole. So I think they're going to do sort of similar. We could see something sort of similar happening with Collins. I don't think he'll be up this year. I really find it hard to justify having him up this year. But barring an injury, you know, we could see him as a, you know, every other day or every third day catcher. And you gotta love a catcher that walks. You gotta love a catcher that gets on base. These are things that are really cool and are, that's a lost art, it seems, walking and getting on base.
It really is. All right, let's move on to our next guy.
Matt, who do you have at number five?
Chance Cisco.
That's so unfortunate.
That sounds familiar.
It sounds very familiar. I put down, I actually misspoke when I spoke last time about Cisco being my sixth guy. He's actually my fifth as well. Just give a few, you know, I guess glowing reports about Cisco and why you have him at number five there, Matt.
Andy kind of alluded to it earlier. I think he comes up in September with the Orioles, which isn't going to help you for fantasy aspect, but I think the Orioles are grooming him to be the man for 2018 behind the plate. The thing with Cisco is the plus hit tool is going to carry the day. The power is developing. It's going to come. I just don't know if it's ever more than 15 homers max, which is fine for the catcher position if he keeps a strong hit tool up. But the ceiling isn't very high, and there's also doubts that he sticks at catcher. I think he will. He's definitely a nice sneaky add in dynasty formats because he's kind of underrated in the sense that, you know, he's a Baltimore Oriole prospect. They don't get much pub, and hit tool is the dominant tool on offense that you want. And he has that. So it's worth knowing. And he's still young, 21 years old. So get on board with Cisco because he'll be the catcher for the Orioles in a good ballpark in 2018.
You hit on pretty much everything. Proximity to the majors, I think, is the most important aspect of Cisco right now. And the hit tool is obviously the best fantasy asset he really has at this point. So, you know, strong batting average, plays in a good ballpark, has good enough defensive chops to stay at the position and play pretty much full time whenever he is in his peak. That's fine. You know, I think his upside is a top 11, 12 catcher, you know, so maybe close to starting in your normal 12 team mixed leagues at some point during his peak, but he had the luckiest
upside
home run.
Like Yadi Molina.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't even think that because Yadi had some really nice offensive years. You know, yeah. I don't believe that with Cisco. I think that he will never have the power to be, and maybe he does develop it as, you know, time goes on. I know you and I also, Matt, have been very open about the fact that catchers really develop the power later in their career. So maybe Cisco is the type of guy that can be somewhat of a late bloomer and gets, you know, to up to 20 home run or 25 home run power once he's in his 30 to 35 year old range. But at least for now, I'm not that high on him, but I do think he's a safe guy. And that's also very important when you're looking at prospects. So he had the luckiest home run in the world in the futures game, which drove me absolutely crazy. I think he was like the only prospect in the futures game that didn't hit a home run in batting practice, and then he hits one in the game. That's just that's lucky to me. So I'm not that big a fan, but the fact that he's at five really shows that the catching position is pretty weak, not just in the regular fantasy but also in the minor leagues. And the fact that just proximity to the majors means a lot. So
we all have the same top five, just a little shuffled around.
Yeah, that's very true. And I think a lot of people would if you're having
definitely.
A top five
I think
list,
it's pretty so. Cut and dry on this one.
This should get to the point where it kind of changes a bit. So let's go with our number six players. I will lead it off. My number six catcher is Will Smith, the first round pick of the Dodgers this year. Andy, who is your number six guy?
My number six is actually Carson Kelly from the Cardinals.
Interesting. Matt, who's yours?
Carson Kelly.
All right, well, I'm going to let you two, you know, sit there and glow about Matt's boy from St. Louis. So, Andy, I'll let you start.
So we're going to keep harping on this, and we're going to keep moving back to this, but it's all about proximity. This is how we're going to sort of, if you're talking about winning a championship this year, you don't want to draft a 19-year-old. It's going to be fun, and you're going to be able to say, oh, look, he's 19. He's going to be able to be the greatest baseball player ever, but if you're talking about winning, you want to get guys that are going to play. Now, I'm not saying that Carson Kelly plays this year, but he's got the age. He's got the defense. The bat is a little worrisome. He got a cup of coffee last year, and it didn't pan out so great. But he's shown that he can hit in the high 290s batting average, which, again, like we said earlier, it's just a lost art for a catcher. So that's why I'm high up on him.
He makes it. I'm just going to kind of give a few words since I don't even have him in my top 10 or in my honorable mentions. I just think he's a better all-around major league catcher than fantasy asset. And there's a ton of those guys that exist. Do I think he has the power to be a 15-plus home run guy at some point? Absolutely. But I haven't seen it yet. And as he goes up in the minors, the power just hasn't shown up for me yet. And while he has exhibited some nice average and he puts the barrel to the ball, he doesn't walk enough, the plate skills aren't good enough for me, plus, and then when you add in the fact that he hasn't really shown the raw power, yet, or it hasn't translated to games quite yet, that's where I kind of get a little bit skeptical of somebody like Kelly. And I don't like St. Louis's home ballpark. So for me, even though the proximity is close, I'm not high on him enough yet to put him in my top 10. Doesn't mean I hate him. I looked at him a ton. I'm not quite there yet with him. But Matt, give us some more insight in terms of what you think of Carson Kelly moving forward.
Well, I guess the thing, obviously you touched on the proximity, but the thing for me in a 20-team dynasty league, 15-team dynasty league, he offers a level of safety that a lot of these catchers below him do not have. I do not think the hit tool is anywhere better than average long-term. He's a little bit of a late convert to the catching position. I mean, he was drafted by the Cardinals as a third baseman, didn't make the switch full-time until 2014. So he's only been doing this for 2 years. He's already got a gold glove from the minor league gold glove in the bag from 2015 while he was in high A. I mean, yeah, the offense has been bad, but he kind of stepped up this year, started posting a little bit better batting average. He walked a little bit more this year than he had in the past. The doubles picked up a little bit. He was drafted as a third baseman. A third baseman, he was looked at with a plus arm and projectable he's supposed to have, I don't know, above average raw power, and he's supposed to have a decent hit tool. And right now, you can start to see glimpses of that. I do think the only offensive tool that he has that is average is going to be the raw power, which I think is slightly above. But the only way he's going to tap into it is with his strength and leverage. It's just kind of, he doesn't have the elite athleticism a lot of these guys have. But the strength and leverage are what's going to get him the 10 to 12 home runs at his peak. And I think in a big dynasty league like I play in a lot of those, and I think he's valuable in that because the floor is so high.
All right, I'll give some thoughts on my boy Will Smith, who I just love the upside. You know, he was drafted by the Dodgers, you know, in the first round this year, did well in only 200 at-bats. He made it all the way up to high A, which I love. He has great plate skills, really smooth line drive stroke. He also provides a couple stolen bases, and I think the power could get upwards of 20 if things kind of broke right for him. Mind you, it's somebody that's going to take probably a little bit more time than we would expect from somebody that's, you know, as well developed as he already is, but I love the offensive profile, and I think that he's somebody that can really help in fantasy league sometime in the next 2 years. So that's the guy I'm going to go with. That's the guy I'm going to go with at six. Go ahead.
Average hit tool, average speed, and average power. I mean, fuck, that's not bad, right?
No, it's not bad at all. And I like the analytics department from the Dodgers. I think they really know what they're doing. I obviously love Andrew Friedman. He's, you know, my Rays boy, so I will always kind of trust his instincts there. But yeah, I think from a fantasy profile, he definitely fits the bill of being a guy that can be solid for you. So,
I really like what Will Smith did. I mean, in 2014 and 2015, he struggled in college. Hit 221 and 242 at Louisville. And last year in 2016, he hit 380, 476, 573, and then finished it off with a pro debut across three different levels of the Dodgers, which he didn't hit for much average, but he showed really, really nice plate skills and some speed, and the defensive profile is nice. So, yeah. He's probably the best defensive catcher in last year's draft, when that does mean something at this position, because if he's going to stay there and provide average offensive stats, that's a hell of a player.
And I'm an athleticism whore, and he fits that bill. He's a pretty Definitely solid does. Athlete. I just like him a lot. So let's move on to our number seven guy. Andy, who is your number seven overall catching prospect?
So this is where I'm going to introduce my craziness. This might be a little outlandish, but I'm going to go with Mitch Garver here.
All right, I like it. Mix it up. Matt, who do you have?
Sorry, I was on mute there. I'm going to go with Garrett Stubbs.
Garrett Stubbs, and I also have Garrett Stubbs there. So I want you, Andy, to give us some insight as to why you chose Mitch Garver up at number seven here.
So I just like this guy's defensive frame. He's got a good arm. He's got a good arm. He's shown great plate skill. He can hit. He's okay. He's not the greatest power hitter, but, and I'm going to keep hitting on this, coming back to it, he's got a spot. If he wants it, it's his to lose. He's definitely going to get an invite in spring training, but I have no doubt that if Castro or J.R. Murphy, who I hate, I'm a Yankee fan and I hate J.R. Murphy, if either of them goes down or has a bad spring or, you know, gets traded or whatever have you, we can easily see Mitch Garver come up, and he's not going to be the sexiest pick, but he is going to be that safe catcher who you can rely on day in, day out.
You know, I was about to bash you for this, but, you know, I like the fact that you're looking at a proximity to a major, to the majors type of stance when you're doing your list. So I can't really hate you for that. And I can definitely appreciate you going with that. I don't care for Mitch Garver. I don't know if you have any other, you know, words, Matt, but I don't have him on my list. It's not because I, you know, think he's a terrible player. I just, from a fantasy perspective, I don't have a lot of love here for him. But how about you, Matt?
I think Garver's in the right organization because, I mean, I pulled up some real quick numbers here. It says Garver threw out just short of 50% of the runners this year, and he's made big strides in the catching and receiving when he's in the right organization for that, because they just signed Jason Castro because he can frame pitches. So Garver's in a good spot to get in playing time. So I like to pick. I wouldn't have him this high. I think I might have him as a deep flyer, probably in the 12 to 15 range, but you're splitting hairs at this point, and the proximity's there. So, yeah, I don't mind it.
And he could hit double-digit home runs. I mean, he's not a batting average guy, but yeah, he definitely could hit double-digit home runs, and that the possibility for playing time is certainly there. So I can't argue that.
He's Carson Kelly without the playing time.
Yeah.
At least as of right now. And we were kind of talking pre-show. All of these, we look at all these rosters right now, and it all looks great. But then once guys go down, you can't ever predict when certain players go down for teams. And say something does happen to Castro, and J.R. Murphy certainly hasn't been the best in health or durability over his career. He could certainly get a spot at some point. I don't hate it. The injury bug bites everybody at some point, so I don't mind kind of looking at guys that are close to the majors and trying to capitalize when, you know, other people might not even be thinking about. I wasn't even thinking about him there, but it makes a little bit of sense when you look at it. Maybe in AL only, it makes a little bit more sense, but I don't mind it. Matt, give us some glowing reports on Garrett Stubbs, who I'm really excited about.
Well, first thing first, like I said, in this position, it does matter. Then he's going to stay behind the plate. So that is something we need to consciously be aware of. He just missed my Astros top 10 prospect list. He was my first cut, and I was kind of uncomfortable about it because I do like him. But the thing with Stubbs is you got to like the hit tool. The defense, like I said, throwing out runners is his strength. Yes, they have McCann, so I'm not sure how much time he comes up this year. But I do think any time you can get I don't roster catchers in Dynasty Leagues. I want to make that very clear. I very, very, very rarely will roster a catcher in Dynasty Leagues, and I probably won't roster Stubbs anywhere. But, I mean, he is a catcher with a plus hit tool with an excellent, excellent batting eye. And I know that's really important for you and me, Mike. And like I said, the arm is there. The framer graves out pretty well in the BP metrics for framing pitches. Plus hit tool, excellent batting eye, and 10 to 15 homers with a lot of doubles is pretty nice.
I think he could be JT Realmuto 2.0 for fantasy. He is He is a smaller guy, so, you know, he's not somebody when you look at him, you're going to be like, wow, he's impressive. You're actually probably going to think the opposite. You're going to think, how is he even a catcher? But the fact that he posted 82 and 91% contact rates in high A and in double A last year is overwhelmingly awesome for me. I get really excited about that. And he you know, talking about the Realmuto comp, he stole 15 of 18 bases last year. I mean, he only got caught 3 times. That's a really nice success rate, especially for a catcher. He was converted too. Am I right? I could be wrong there, but I'm pretty sure he was converted from another position. Matt, can you give me more info there? Or do you know?
I know it, since he's drafted out of Southern Cal. I think he played a little bit of somewhere else there. I don't want to say where because I'm not sure, but I do remember hearing that. But I mean, he's been a catcher ever since the Astros grabbed him. So,
well, regardless, he's a really good athlete as seen by his stolen bases, but I do think he has 15-15 potential. The power is coming around. It's not quite there yet, but the power, I think, is what's holding him back from being a top 5 guy. If he ends up going for 15 or 20 home runs somehow this year in the minors and keeps that speed up, you're going to be seeing him as a top 5 catching prospect, maybe even top 3 going into next year if things broke right. So I'm really excited about Stubbs. This is a really good year to monitor what he's doing. I don't think he gets playing time in the majors, but I do love what he's been doing in the minors, and I'm really excited about him.
One of the most underrated prospects in the game.
Absolutely. Let's see who we have at number 8 here. I love that we're mixing things up a bit because I was getting a little worried at the beginning that we were all going to have the same guys. So, Matt, who do you have at number 8?
He's probably not going to stick at catcher, and that's a caveat that I'm willing to put up with here because it's a dart throw at this point. Jacob Nottingham.
Wow, I also have Jacob Nottingham. I don't like that we're very similar, Matt. How about you? How about you, Andy?
So I have Jacob Nottingham in my number 9 spot, who is behind Stubbs.
All right. So there. Well, how about you talk about Stubbs a little bit, Andy? I'm sorry, I kind of skipped you there, but you know, do you have any other thoughts about Stubbs, or do you, you know, want to just move on to Nottingham?
No, I think you guys said it all. I like his. I actually like that he doesn't kind of have that prototypical frame for a catcher. But it's hard to sort of say, oh, he's going to be. I definitely agree that if he continues his trend, he will be a top three catcher that we're looking at next year, and that is like 90% to do with his contact rate because it's just stellar.
It's obscene. It's obscene for a catcher. It really is.
I would just say that it's that proximity. It's just, I'm going to keep harping on that. Now, I'm sorry if I'm sounding like a broken record to our listeners, but
no.
When it comes to value, it's got to be who's closest. And again, nothing bad to say about Nottingham. He is a cool guy, and I really think that he is going to move, which is a bummer, but it'll save his knees. Contact rate is lower than Stubbs's was, but he's a great kid, and it'll be fun to see him move to first base.
I just want to say, upgrading guys that are closer to the major leagues, I have no problem with. I'm just a real upside whore. So when it comes to looking at fantasy guys, I want to find players that are going to help me build a juggernaut that, you know, when I beat guys, I'm not trying to just beat them by the hair on my chin. Like, I'm trying to crush my opponents. And, you know, looking at somebody like Stubbs, he's somebody that gives me the opportunity to do that. I should have ranked him above Chance Sisko, but, you know, me looking at the back of my mind, like, well, this guy's much closer to the majors than Stubbs is. That's why I put him up there. But there's no problem upgrading somebody that's closer to the majors that might not have the same upside as somebody that's farther away, because you never know what happens with these players that are farther away. So definitely don't feel like you're sounding like a broken record. So I think it's something that all of us need to remind ourselves about at times, just kind of putting things in perspective in terms of how and why we're drafting players and how long it might take for them to actually give us some, you know, production on our teams. So Matt, give us a little bit of Jacob Nottingham stats and, you know, let us know why you love him so much.
Well, I love him so much with an asterisk. I just wish he could catch, man. I don't know if the bat is going to be upper echelon enough to play at first base. But, I mean, he did put up good numbers before this year, so maybe this is just a blip. Struck out too much, chases a lot of pitches out of the zone. The walk rate was too light for me. Defensively, 21 pass balls and 15 errors last year. That's not good.
Yeah.
So I don't know what you can do with that. He still has the raw power. If you have him in any league, you have to hold, because you're not going to get back for him what you paid for him at this time last year. And don't worry, I was in on Nottingham last year too, so I'm feeling the burn with you. But I'm still there now a little bit. I just don't know if he hits enough to play first base, but I do think the potential is there to hit 25, even 30 home runs in Milwaukee, but I just don't know if he's good enough to play first base.
This is my thing about Nottingham. I actually looked it up. He was BP's number 70 prospect overall going into last season. And BP doesn't just put guys up there that don't have the upside to perform like that. I still like Nottingham, and I think that this is really a solid buy-low opportunity, because if he doesn't work out, you're getting him at a solid cost and can probably, you know, afford to take a loss there if for some reason he doesn't pan out. But I think the upside is legit for somebody that you're going to get at a much reduced cost at this point based on where he was last season. He's put up multiple lines in the minor leagues that have been great in terms of power and in batting average, and he's had passable contact rates as well. The defense is something that I'm definitely alarmed by, but if it does work out, then you're looking at a catcher that can hit 25, maybe even 30 bombs in that ballpark. Miller Park is one of the top ballparks to hit in all of baseball. I'm willing to bet that it works out, as opposed to, you know, wishing that it or looking at it as, you know, he already has failed. That's kind of the way I'm looking at it.
The best thing for Nottingham is if Andrew Susak continues to fail.
Susak is garbage. I'm not going to keep waiting on somebody like Susak. I used to like him, but in the majors, he has continually shown that he doesn't have the ability to hit. I mean, it's gotten to the point where he's not even hitting lefties enough anymore. Nottingham, I'm not willing to give up on yet. So I think that this is a really prime time to buy low on somebody. Again, last year, if we were to put him on this list, I think he would have been a top three, top four guy. He probably would have been ahead of Mejia, probably would have been close to Alfaro. I mean, people were talking about Nottingham last year like he was the second coming of Jesus. I just don't know how this all of a sudden drops this far, you know.
Mejia would have been a borderline candidate for this list last year with the numbers he put up. So, yeah, I mean, shit changes so fast.
Yeah. So I'm willing to bet on the power, which is what all of us can use in fantasy, and I'm willing to bet on a rebound. Let's see what happens, and hopefully it works out for Nottingham. We shall see. Let's go to our number 9 catcher, and we definitely need to speed things up a little bit since we still have a whole other position to get to.
Yeah.
Number 9.
We're having too much fun.
I know. It's really tough. When you start talking about prospects, it's hard to, you know, not talk about every single facet of what they can possibly offer. But, Andy, who's your number 9 catcher?
So my number 9 was Nottingham, but my number 10.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah.
My number 10 is, here you go, you're talking about your upside, is Kilbert Rees. I love this kid. Whenever you get drafted and you're 18 and you're like a shit for brains and you don't know what's going on, and then you go on and you hit 345, and then in the same year when you get promoted, you hit 485. I mean, that's just so cool. So here's my fun pick for you all. Kilbert Rees, he's going to win Silver Slugger at every position in 10 years.
I have him as an honorable mention, so good for you.
Me
for
too.
Nabbing
Me too.
One of those guys here. I agree. I don't know what to quite make of him quite yet because he's so
don't
young.
Don't make anything of him.
But I 17. Certainly love what he did last year, and I love the contact. You know, he didn't strike out at all in the minors, yeah. And that's great to see. I know it was only a little bit, over 220 at bats or so, but I loved what I've seen. So I have him as an honorable mention for all those reasons. I think he has legitimate fantasy upside when it gets there. It's going to be a couple of years, guys, so
yeah.
Make sure you wait it out. Yeah. But that's a great upside play. And I like how you mix the upside in with the, you know, close to majors folks as well. So, Matt, who's
your
number?
I got to give the people what they want.
Yeah, I agree. Matt, who's your number 9 catcher?
Chase Vellett. I don't know if you want me to go on. Who's your number 9, Mike?
My number 9 is Austin Barnes. I will let you go on. I have Vellett as one of my honorable mentions as well. So.
Vellett for me is echo a lot of what Jason, what we talked about Nottingham, ratchet the power down about four or five home runs at his peak, and you're looking at Vellett. Vellett was a bat speed whore. I'm a bat speed whore, so we're friends there on that aspect. He was actually, he popped up on the radar for me when scouting out these guys. He was the fastest recorded bat speed at one of those perfect game camps. And he's got leverage, big, strong kid with leverage, but he's horrible defensively and might not stick. And he does not have the bat for first base like Nottingham maybe does. Vellett does not. So if he doesn't stick, he's out. And he's really bad defensively. He doesn't have an arm back there yet. So a little bit risky, but the upside is immense if he can hit.
To me, Vellett has power for days, and I think he has 25 home run pop. Whenever he does make the majors, the problem is I don't know what the batting average is going to be like because
it's going to be bad.
He's been just as good as his power has been, his contact rate has been obscenely bad. I mean, 57%, 53%, 62%. He hasn't even hit double A yet. So that's, especially for a team in Kansas City that loves contact profiles, that could end up being a big problem for somebody like Vellett.
Strong walk rate's nice, though.
And I was going to mention that. His walk rates have been strong, and in OBP formats, if that's what you play in, then Vellett could be much better in terms of, you know, an OBP guy than, you know, average batting out than a batting average asset, that's for sure. In terms of Austin Barnes, for me, he, you know, ended up getting a little bit of time in the MLB last year. He can play multiple infield spots as well. He also has 15 upside, in my opinion, but he's just a little bit, you know, less, he's just not as, you know, I guess, I don't think he's as much of a star as some of the other guys I mentioned, and, you know, Stubbs being the main one. I think that if you're looking at upside between Barnes and Stubbs, Stubbs has much higher potential, in my opinion. But I do think Barnes has a lot of the same skill set, and he's closer to the major leagues. He's actually right now penciled in to be the bench option at catcher for the Dodgers, and we all know how great Yasmani Grandal is at staying healthy or being durable. So Barnes could come into some meaningful time this year, which is why I put him as one of my guys on this list. So that's why I'm going with Barnes. Any of you guys have any type of comments about Barnes? I'll go with you, Matt.
So Grandal would literally be the perfect player if he was healthy. I love him so much.
It would be nice.
Barnes, he just missed the cut for me. I do think he's a guy definitely playable in NL only because he's going to get at-bats everywhere this year. So nothing much to add. I think you nailed it. Strong batting average with potential 15 homers and steals with the playing time. So if he gets the playing time. So, yeah, I like it.
Do you have any comments, Andy, on Barnes or Vellett?
So I like Vellett. I don't like the organization. I have really bad ties with Kansas City. They just seem to ruin good young guys. I remember Bubba Starling. So high on Bubba Starling.
Man. Who is that guy? I can't even remember.
Yeah, Exactly. That's exactly right. And that's what Kansas City did. But my problem with Barnes is when you see these guys, they jump around organizations, they jump around levels. It's not like healthy. So, you know, these guys, they don't like moving around. You know, we like to think of them as, you know, stats or numbers on a board, but they're people and they don't like jumping around, and it does affect performance. So yeah, the batting average is nice and the home run and the steals potential is definitely there. I mean, I think he stole 18 in 2016 for Triple A, but it's just the moving around a lot is not conducive. It's not nurturing.
Agreed, which is why I have him at 10. I think that there's a strong likelihood that he could be a part-time catcher for his career, right, not just this season. But that's kind of the risk you take there. But he's very close to the majors. I think he's going to play the majority of this year on a major league ball club. I just, you know, for me, it's kind of tough to, you know, see the upside, you know, coming to fruition with somebody like Barnes if he doesn't get the playing time. So I think you make a great point there. Let's move on to our number 10 guy. I know you already gave us yours, Andy. So, Matt, who's your number 10 catcher? Let's wrap this up.
Zombie Max Pentecost. I'm not ready to give up. 2016 was essentially his first year as a pro. I mean, only had 105 at bats in 2014, missed the 2015 with the shoulder surgeries, plural, not good. 302, 361, 486, 17 doubles, 3 triples, 10 homers, 5 steals across 2 levels of A-ball, which are very pitcher-heavy leagues, and he still put up really gaudy stats. Only problem is he was a DH for every single game, did not play the field at all. Complete wild card, but that's why he's 10th.
I also have him as my 10th catcher for a lot of the same reasons. I do think he will stick at catcher, though. I know they had him out all last season, but that was mainly due to his shoulder problems. They've already formally said that he is going to get a shot to catch again this year. So based on how that goes, that could play a big role in terms of his long-term value. If he ends up doing okay at catcher this year, then we could see him continue to gradually move up levels and remain at the position. If we don't, then that's where you might see him end up being a DH first base type guy. He is athletic, and I love his raw power, which is why I have him here. Toronto's a great place to hit. I'm just a little worried about whether he's going to stick at catcher, but the upside is truly there, and I think that he is definitely somebody you should try and buy low, at least right now, kind of in the same, you know, same way as Jacob Nottingham in that respect, because I think both of them have had just they had both had a rough 2016 and they need to kind of move forward and let's see what we got in them. So any honorable mention guys that we want to, you know, make notice of at this point? I only have one that hasn't been talked about, and that's Bruce Maxwell. The only reason I have him here is because I do think he is a strong double-digit home run power guy. He does have, I think, 260 batting average in his bat. Not the greatest overall profile, but I do think he plays a ton this year. He's a lefty, so I think, you know, that's also solid in terms of maximizing possible playing time. Stephen Vogt, I know, is there, and they also have Josh Begley in Oakland as well. And the ballpark itself isn't conducive to home run power, but I do love Maxwell, not in terms of being like a top five catcher at some point in his career, but I love how close he is to the majors, and I think that he's going to get a legitimate shot at times this year to play. So that's why I have him as one of my honorable mentions. I also, you know, mentioned other guys that have already been talked about. So, Andy, is there anybody in your honorable mentions that you want to kind of give a quick, you know, just a quick insight on?
So I have Tyler Stevenson as my sort of fringe honorable mention guy. He's legit. He's got all the things we like. He's young. He has had a full season and did pretty well. I mean, when you get to the the 11th or 12th prospected catcher, we're at the bottom of the barrel here, but he's got a good bat. He probably will stick a catcher, which is nice. And his strikeout rate is a little gaudy, but contact rate is fine. BAPIB, I like the BAPIB. So Tyler Stevenson is my honorable mention.
I don't mind that pick. I think he has a ways to go, but I definitely don't mind it. How about you, Matt?
Well, I had Stevenson. He's going to be one of my guys. I had Keibert Ruiz, who he mentioned earlier as well. So I guess if I have to pick, if I have to pick one, I'll go Mabrys Viloria from the Royals. A plus hit tool, monster year. Last year, truly, truly pop-up guy. Hit like 376 or something crazy. Finally found the power stroke. Didn't have a single extra base hit last season. In 2015. 2016, he had a lot more than zero. So he had really good numbers. Brett Cumberland's a good sleeper from the Braves draft pick this year. Tomas Nito from the Mets. And that's it.
And to be fair, if we look at just the regular fantasy baseball ranks, once you get into the 11th and 12th catchers there, it's not that great either. So,
yeah. Mimics real life, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's that time again. That's right. It's fantasy baseball season, and the Fantasy Black Book is back and better than ever. This is Joe Pisapia, author of the 9-time best-selling Fantasy Black Book series, number one right now on Amazon, on iTunes, and for the first time ever, the Fantasy Baseball Black Book can be held in your hand. Yes, what a beautiful world we live in. Head over to Amazon and buy your hard copy as well today. Baseball is coming. Are you ready?
All right, so after talking all of these catchers, let's move on to an actual position that means a little bit more to fantasy, first base. And this is actually a very interesting topic, I think, because the first base position has just changed drastically in fantasy in the majors, and I think it's also a bit different in the minor leagues as well. There's not as much depth as you would assume. Mind you, there is a few guys that could make their way to that position in the upcoming years, but we're not ranking it that way. We're looking at guys that have played first base to this point. Let's go a little bit different than the catchers. Let's do 1 through 3, and we'll kind of look and see how things kind of diversify here. But, Andy, who is your number 1 through 3 first baseman coming into 2017?
So I don't think we're going to disagree on a lot of this. For at least for 1 through 2, I've got Bell and Bellinger, so double Bell action at 1 and 2. And at 3, I have DJ Peterson. Bell is just... He's gonna play well. I like where he is in the lineup. I like who surrounds him. Pittsburgh is a good club, so let's move on from that. Bellinger again, probably not gonna start in the in MLB, and why would you? Because Agon is there, but he is just waiting. That's it. He literally all he has to do is wait, and when he comes up, he will rip the cover off the ball. And then DJ Peterson, again, I got to keep going back, 25 years old. I like his stuff. I like his numbers. Strikeouts are a bit high, but he slugs like no other. He's going to be up soon. And I'm also sure that Seattle just got rid of, you know, one of their first basemen, if I'm not mistaken. So
Adam Lind,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so he's going to see regular at-bats. Again, for these three guys, they're up. It's just a matter of time. We're going to see good numbers from them.
Matt, what are your top three?
My top three is Cody Bellinger, because he's boss, number one. I love that uppercut swing. It's vicious, but yet in control. Violence, controlled violence is the best in baseball terms.
It's vicious yet gentle.
So, yes, and the uppercut is a beautiful thing to watch, and Bellinger is going to be a monster. It's just a matter of when, because Gonzalez is still there. So, My number two guy is very clear to me, and also it's Josh Bell. I know he just had offseason surgery. He's had knee issues in the past, so it's a little worrisome. It's on a knee again. But I like Bell as a batting average guy. I compared him to Eric Hosmer 2014 version when he came up. And I think that's a good comp, meaning 270, 280, 290 even average with, you know, 18 to 20 home runs, good healthy run totals and RBIs, depending on where he hits, chips in a few steals. And my third guy is... I guess you could say, Andy, you got the right size, wrong shape, because I'm going with a different Mariner, Big Dan Vogelbach for me. I love the hit tool. Power probably maxes out around the 20 range, but I and if I play in OBP formats, his OBP is going to come damn close to 400 if everything clicks, so it's going to be a real nice profile.
Arguably a first baseman, Dan Vogelbach, but that's for another conversation. Actually, it's not for another conversation. This is the exact conversation that we would have about something like that. But my 1 through 3 is very similar to you guys. Actually, at the top, 1-2 is Cody Bellinger for me up top. And I think that he's legit. There's not really much. His actual plate skills have improved coming and was a career high last year, 0.63 strikeout to walk ratio. I think that he is a 270, 25 to 35 home run bat. Yep. It also has a possibility for stolen bases as well. I don't think he's going to be like a burner out there, but I do think he can get 5, 8, 10, somewhere in that region, which always kind of counts whenever you're looking at fantasy players. That certainly helps you out. So I love Bellinger. Love me some Josh Bell. I've loved him since last year. I think that people are a little bit underrated on his power because it has been improving as he's matured and as he's gone through the minor leagues. He's got to learn to be a full-time first baseman as well, and that comes with more power. I think he, you know, coming up as an outfielder, he's been somebody that's been used to using line drives and gap-to-gap power and not really being a guy that's counted on to tap into that home run pop. But I think moving forward, especially once he gets done with this whole, you know, knee issue or whatever, the plate skills are going to play. Like I've always mentioned with him, and what I've always loved is that he is just he's elite in terms of strikeout to walk ratio. There's nobody better, in my opinion, in the minor leagues. He is the prototypical batting average asset. He's also, in my opinion, like I said, the power, I think it's going to grow. I think he has 20 home runs in that bat, and with the plate skills, it just, to me, equates to somebody that's going to be a strong fantasy play for years and years to come. My number three guy is Rowdy Tellez. He has exhibited power. He's a big, strong guy. I think that he is the possibility or, you know, to hit at least 25 to 30 home runs in the majors. Maybe the upside for more in Rogers Center. I think we always kind of put a label on strong power guys at like 25, 30 home runs, but he has legitimate 40 home run pop if things worked out for him. Love the guy. I think at number three, it might be stretching it just a little bit, but I completely believe in him. I think he is a strong, strong bet to make the major leagues at some point. He also exhibits a strong walk rate, doesn't strike out a ton. Love Rowdy Tellez. So that's our top three there. As far as DJ Peterson, I'll kind of touch on him. I have him as an honorable mention for me. The contact skills still aren't quite there. I feel like the star is kind of faded for him a bit. I loved him a lot more a couple years ago, but he hasn't really shown me a ton to really count on him. The batting average has fluctuated, and when you mix in the contact problems, I can't really bank on him as a top 10 guy, which is why I have him as an honorable mention. Still intrigued by him. I think he has a ton to offer, especially in power, but I'm just a little worried about the plate skills. Who is your third guy? Vogelbach. I actually have him at number four, so I'll mention him really fast. The walk rate's elite. In on-base percentage formats, he's certainly somebody that you want to look at. But I think he's a full-time DH moving forward. He literally cannot play the position. He's a fat tub of lard out there that can't move. There's no way that he is even athletic enough to play first base. Do I think there's 25-plus bombs in the bat? Absolutely. I think that he's, yeah. I mean, this is a guy that's demonstrated that he can take a walk, not just a little bit, but 20% and higher walk rates at some points in the minor leagues. The guy knows how to take pitches. The guy knows how to work counts. Love that aspect about him, and we're playing fantasy. We're not playing, you know, Stratomatic here. So I love him to death, but at the same time, I think he's going to be a DH whenever it's all said and done here. So, Andy, do you have any comment on Rowdy Tellez?
So I have right after I have Tellez at four, and then Vogelbach at five.
There you go.
I agree. Vogelbach is just too big. He's got to, you know. Go on Jenny Craig or ask CC Sabathia how much alcohol helps. But he is just, I, and we talked about this before with the catchers. I love on base. I love guys that can get on base. It seems like a lost art. First basemen are typically better at it, but this guy, I mean, he is just, it's almost his strikeouts and walks are so close. And that is just so sexy when you're looking at a guy that can get on base, hit, can't run for shit, hits a ton of home runs, moving people in. I mean, we could be seeing, you know, a Jason Giambi or a Chris Carter-esque guy here.
Sure. I don't know if the power is ever like that for me. I wrote about him in my Mariners thing, so I don't want to harp on it too much. But what I wrote basically is you either love him or you don't, because he's a hit tool over power guy for me with strong on base skills, which is still nice. He's Josh Bell with slightly more power upside for me, and obviously none of the athleticism.
Yeah,
I disagree. I mean, Bell is the best example of plate skills, and while Vogelbach walks a ton, he still does strike out a little bit too much for
definitely
me to
does.
Say he's a batting average guy. I'm pretty comfortable saying that Josh Bell is going to be a 280 plus batting average guy in the majors because of the way he approaches his at bats. When you look at Vogelbach, I look at the power to be higher. I mean, he has 23 home runs last year between two levels, so the power is legit to me. I know that the different leagues play differently in terms of, you know, hitting stats, but I do think when you look at him and, you know, I've seen him hit a few times, I think he's the type of guy that can definitely hit for 30 home runs if things broke right. But I do think the strikeout rate would be a little bit higher, which in tandem makes his batting average be a little bit risky. You know, I don't think he's going to be a 280 plus hitter. I think he's more of like a 260 guy, which
you know, it's a little bit different profile than Bell. Bell just, I think, is going to be a batting average first, power second guy. And what I'm, what the argument with Bell is for me is that I think the power kind of creeps up a bit as he matures, which it already has. So that's my only thing there. All right, let's talk about our number five guys since we've been pretty close here. Who's your number five guy, Matt?
My number four guy, well, I guess I'll do my 4-5-6.
Yeah, do 4-5-6, sorry.
my four guy is Bobby Bradley, despite the strikeout concerns. I mean, I love the power, and I love the on-base skills. I mean, yeah, the strikeouts are near 30% right now, and that was in high A, so I'm gambling here a bit. But I feel like first base is a position to gamble because the waiver wire replacement players are going to be a little bit higher offensively at first, so you can grab somebody if in deeper formats. But if I have Bradley in deeper formats, I definitely want to back him up. My number five guy is Roddy Tellez. You touched on him perfectly. I'm a little bit lower on the power output than you are, but I mean, I still think 20, 25 home runs with a good amount of doubles and stuff is going to play. But you, like you said, the ballpark, you never know. And my number six guy is the ever polarizing Mike Warner favorite, Dom Smith.
Who's your number six guy, Andy? I know you went through four and five, right?
Yeah, I said Tellez and Vogelbach. My number six guy is actually Smith. You guys were shitting on him during the break, but I think he's a great kid. He does what we expect from first basemen, which is hit for pretty decent average. Contact rate is really good. We like that. The BABIP is high. It's a high. It's a scary high. It's not a good high, but his contact rate is legit. He's a serious hitter, and that's why I have him at my number six.
Yeah, I have Vogelbach at four, and then number five for me is Bobby Bradley for a lot of the reasons Matt already touched on. He had 27 home runs at A-ball in 2015, 29 in high A in 2016. Mind you, that comes with pretty dramatic contact problems, so That's something that he needs to work on moving forward. But I think he is the type of guy that does have 40 home run power, and he should be a top five, you know, first base prospect just based on that alone. Hopefully the contact gets a little bit better, but he can take a walk, and in OBP formats, which is where everything's kind of trending, I think he's worthy of being up there. I have Dom Smith at number six, and I honestly hate myself a little bit more for doing that. I think he is, you know, we're talking about fat tubs of lard with somebody like Vogelbach. Smith is just the epitome of somebody that either plays when he wants to or doesn't when he doesn't want to. Like, he's just kind of a prima donna to me. And when you look at him, when you actually watch him, the power doesn't translate for me when you look at his body. He looks like somebody that is like Pablo Sandoval-esque that should be able to hit for 25-plus home runs, and he just doesn't. Love the contact skills. He's certainly an advanced hitter. He does know how to take a walk as well, but I just don't think the power will ever translate to being a top, you know, 10, you know, first baseman in fantasy, which is what you would grab a guy like Smith for, especially if you're doing like a startup dynasty right now. I think he would just go higher than he deserves to go. And, you know, while I have him at six, I think he's going to be a major leaguer. I'm really not in for him. So that's me on Dom Smith.
I guess I want to unveil my Dom Smith plan. We talked about it,
pre-show. Yeah,
talked about it in the break here. I mean, he's going to go to the single best offensive park in minor league baseball in Las Vegas next year. We know he has a plus hit tool. That's not anything you can deny. The last two seasons in pitchers leagues, he's hit over 300. That's good. You got to respect that. He's going to go to the best offensive park in Vegas, and he's going to put up monster cartoon numbers. If you're the wise fantasy player, which you are for listening to us, you're going to take advantage of that, and you're going to trade him at the break and get something better because his numbers are going to be an all-time high. I mean, look at, like, for example, Gavin Cecchini, who's a little no-bat shortstop middle infield prospect for the Mets last year in AAA in Vegas, hit 325, 390, 448 with 8 homers and 27 doubles. He had, like, 12 homers his entire minor league career up until that. This place is a launching pad. So take advantage of that and flip Smith or whatever you can.
I love that strategy. I think that that's the best thing to do with Dom Smith personally. So let's move on to our, 7 through 10 guys at this point. Andy, give us your 7 through 10.
Well, I just want to mention one of the reasons why I had Smith a little bit higher than Bradley is that drop in contact. It really hurt his value for me last year. But you're right. LA is going to be a definite launching pad. So for my next couple picks, it's sort of like a conglomerate. I really don't I mean, at this point, it could go sort of either way. But Sam Travers and Josh Naylor, those are the that's the bottom end of my 9 and 10.
Who do you have at you have Bobby Bradley at 7? I'm assuming.
Right. Yeah, Bobby Bradley at 7. And
okay. And who do you have at 8?
Oh, I'm sorry, I missed that. I have Ryan Hoskins at 8.
Gotcha. All right. And I just want to say with the Dom Smith comparison to Bobby Bradley, not comparison, but you know the decision to list them higher than Dom Smith, it's completely upside based. But I do agree. I mean, proximity to the majors, Dominic Smith wins. Mm-hmm. In terms of plate skills, Dom Smith wins. And if you're looking at things that way, I think he is the safer bet to maximize his projection. But if you are willing to gamble, Bobby Bradley's maximum projection has him, at least in my opinion, upwards of 40 home runs. And if he can just get that contact rate to like 75%, you know, where he's averaging about 25% in the strikeout rate, that's solid to me. And I think that he will be able to perform up to expectations if that does happen. So that's a good kind of, you know, comparison as to why you would rank those guys as such. Matt, who's your 7 through 10?
First base is position to gamble, so I'm all over Bradley here. 7, 8, 9, and 10 for me. I struggle with these guys. I had them probably in every single combination of ranking possible. They're all one thing in common. Their proximity to the majors is all high. They're all probably middling. Yeah. 20, 22 homer bats that can hit 260, 270 for you. None of them are going to win you. None of them are ever going to be the best player on your fantasy team, but they're going to be guys that can be solid contributors. And they are in order: Reese Hoskins, Trey Mancini, Casey Gillespie, and Jake Bowers.
My 7 is Reese Hoskins, although I do want to just kind of talk about him really fast by himself. He put up 38 home runs last year in Double-A. You know, he does have at least elite pull power from what I have read. I haven't really seen a lot of him, but Matt, you know, I'm sure you've seen a ton of him. Mm-hmm. Do you just not believe that?
You got to ratchet the numbers down. The Double-A reading is a massive part.
I know it's a massive hitter's part, but just in general, uh-huh, talking about his swing itself.
Yeah, I don't think he's conducive to power in the big leagues. I think it translates to 25 homer power if he gets the at-bats. So I have no issue with the power. Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to – and what about his batting average? Because I think he is a batting average asset as well.
I think so, too. I mean, I always kind of – I'm always on the passive end when it comes to batting average. It's really hard to predict, so I always go lower to shoot my expectations down. So I could see 280 being his ultimate – 280, 285 ultimate line. But, I mean, I'm more comfortable in the 270 range. But you're splitting hairs at that point. So I have no issues with Hoskins as a bat. So
I think I'm a little higher. You know, he has – strong plate skills, definitely more advanced than Bobby Bradley at this point. The upside in home run power isn't there, but I do think I don't think he has 40 home run power. I think that he certainly has somewhere in the 30 range, and that's solid with a strong walk rate, pretty decent strikeout rate. I mean, nothing to write home about, but it's solid. I think it's okay enough to be a top, you know, 7 guy here. My next guy, number 8, is Josh Naylor. I will never be able to get over him. I love him to death. I know he's a project and he's young, but I will forever love Josh Naylor. Number 9 is Casey Gillespie. And kind of like you said, Matt, these guys are kind of interchangeable at this point. You can swap them however you prefer, but Casey Gillespie is there. And then you have Lewin Diaz over there at my last spot.
Nice.
You know, that's so interesting. We'll kind of I'll kind of hit on Sam Travis really fast because I'm just not enthused. And it's not because there's nothing there, but I just don't see him being a fantasy first baseman that I love moving forward. He's a little bit too old, doesn't offer enough in terms of the counting stats that you look for in fantasy. Not to say that I do think he's a safe major leaguer. I think at some point he will make the majors, and that's in itself is valuable, but I'm just not the highest guy on him. I don't know if you agree, Matt, or should we move on?
Yeah, Sam Travis, I'm just bland about him, so yeah, I'm there.
All right, who's the next guy we want to talk about from this group? I'm kind of forgetting already everybody's 7 through 10. So Jake Bowers, I think, is a good one to kind of touch on. What do you feel about Jake Bowers there, Andy?
So this is as legit as first base hype gets. And you gotta love a player in the Tampa Bay system. He was actually on my fringe list. But as you were saying before, these kind of guys, they're all sort of 275, 285, 20 home run potential. But I guess out of all of them, I have to pick Jake Bowers. Has a little nod up. His contact rate is probably his biggest asset, and he does not strike out a lot, which is nice. So, But again, I guess at this point, we're all splitting hairs. I really can't. It's hard for me to sort of say that one of these guys is better than the other. But purely based on age and the system that he's in and his contact rate, I'd probably have to say Bowers edges out.
I think Bowers for me is up there with the on-base percentage, like you guys touched the plate approach. The power is probably not as high as the other three guys I listed ahead of him, but he's going to make up for it with the stolen bases. He's athletic. He's playing actually kind of, he's put his time between outfield and first base. He's athletic enough to play the outfield. He's on the same team as Casey Gillespie for some of the year, and Gillespie is not athletic. He had to play first, and they wanted to get him both in the lineup, so they moved Bowers to the outfield. I do think his ultimate home is first. He's a really slick defender there, and I think that matters to a team like Tampa. I mean, you look at some of the first bases they threw James Loney out there for a full season. So you try to tell me defense doesn't matter at that position for them, then you're crazy. But I mean, I like the overall package as a player, and you got to remember defense often is a tiebreaker for me in fantasy. And Bowers plays elite defense at first, so I'm going to include him.
He is a Ray, and obviously I love that, and I love any glowing reports on Rays. So I will definitely take that, but. I just, he does offer kind of the same things that Josh Bell does in the fact that he has, he's highly talented at the plate. Great walk rate, doesn't strike out a ton at all. Actually, very similar plate skills to somebody like Josh Bell. I just don't believe in the power projecting out to 20 or more at any point, which is what you would want from a first baseman. But that's not to say he's not valuable. He was one of my guys on my honorable mentions list. I like the profile. I just don't know if he's going to be a first baseman forever because they're kind of teetering on that. I don't know if that's a position they're actually going to keep him at. But he also could play outfield, which is certainly a little bit valuable. He does steal a little bit too, which is nice. So that's kind of like a little added benefit of taking somebody like a Jake Bowers if you wanted to go that route. I do like him. I don't have him in my top 10, but that doesn't mean I dislike him in any way, shape, or form. I do want to just hit on Josh Naylor and see what you guys think about him because I know he's a head case. I know he attempted to almost kill a guy. Not really, but he did a couple crazy things last season.
Minor league story of the year, easily.
But what I've always been impressed by is his ability to not, always be younger than the age, but look like he belongs. And even in the Futures game, when you watched him last year, the body itself looks like he is advanced enough to be in the major leagues. And mind you, he's not ready and he won't be for a couple years, but he just looks like he belongs everywhere he goes, even though he's been younger for seemingly every level that he's been at. Only a 16% strikeout rate last year, which is nice. He does need to tap into that power a bit more, but he's only 19 years old and in high A. He's a big, big guy, 200 plus pounds. I think that there's some a Prince Fielder in this guy, and that's just me personally. That's what I've always kind of compared him to. I don't think the power is ever going to be 40, but I do think he's going to be teetering on the 30 home run line at some point in his career once he figures everything out. And when you look at the contact skills, you look at his ability to take some walks, even though it's not elite, and it's not elite plate skills either, he is somebody that I'm really excited about because he's always been young for the level, and he's always been able to kind of overcome those obstacles, as you will, whenever he's been there. So I do want to get some of your analysis on somebody like Josh Naylor. I'll start with you, Andy.
Well, so I completely agree with everything, and part of the reasons why he was low on my list was again, we're talking about a 19-year-old here, actually younger than me, which is kind of scary. But I want to warn people when they're looking at Josh Naylor. People are going to look at him and they're going to say, oh, 10 steals in 90 games.
No
he's
way.
Clearly
no.
going to be a first baseman that steals. Like, everyone should just, like, stop drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit. This is not going to be a runner. He is not going to be a runner
in any way.
So
not even
so
five.
people who are looking at him and saying, yeah, he's Prince Fielder, but he's got a little bit of Paul Goldschmidt, they should just stop. They should realize that this Canadian is not running anywhere.
He's more like Dan Vogelbach than Paul Goldschmidt. If you
exactly.
Matt, what do you feel about Josh Naylor?
Interesting little side story. In the Futures game, obviously I wasn't there, so I'm just reading off people's secondhand reports. Seen a couple of reports. He put on the most impressive batting practice display of any prospect there, according to a lot of things I read. And that was when he was still a member of the Marlins organization. And then I don't know if it's coincidence or not, because the Marlins don't have many prospects, and probably because they matched up. But he was the return straight up, and not straight up. He was part of that Andrew Cashner, Colin Ray fiasco deal. But, I mean, I like Naylor. The power is there for me. Super young for each level, which is 100% worth knowing. I'm glad you brought that up because if you look at the stats in context, you're kind of like, meh. But being young for your level, being Canadian, which means he doesn't play baseball all year round, theoretically, because it's cold in the gray-white north. And warm weather kid, or excuse me, cold weather kid moving down and getting into the warmer weather. He could take off any moment. He's kind of a – I like the Prince Fielder ultimate comp because guess what? It's not completely unrealistic, and that's crazy to say that, right? But it's not. And I am not as high on him as I should, but he would have been my, like, number 12 guy on this list. But, yeah, he's definitely worth bringing up. I'm glad you did.
Yeah, I'm going to always be drinking the Kool-Aid, not the stolen base Kool-Aid on Josh Naylor, but certainly the high pedigree upside of somebody like Naylor. It's going to take some time, but I think he's worth waiting for. I do want to touch on Trey Mancini because I think he's trash, and I'm just going to say that. I don't like the profile at all. I think he's been rushed throughout the minors. I know he's 25 now, but he's went from high A at the beginning of 2015 all the way up to getting a brief stint in the majors at the end of 2016. It's too fast for a guy that doesn't have enough plate skills quite yet. He's going to strike out a little bit too much, in my opinion. The power is solid, and I think that in, you know, somewhere like Camden Yards, he can certainly have 20-plus home runs. But they already, you know, signed Mark Trumbo to a, what, long-term deal, what, 3 or 4 year deal. I think they're going to make adjustments, the Orioles, that is, to try and make sure that Mancini isn't their full-time option at either DH or first base in the coming years because they're a little bit worried about him being a full-time player, which they naturally should be. Does that translate to him being just nothing in fantasy? I don't think so, but I don't love the guy. I think he's a part-time player and not somebody that exhibits the highest upside in the world. I'm looking at him as a 250 batting average guy with 20 home runs if he were to get 500 at-bats, and I just don't see him getting 500 at-bats anytime soon. So that's the only reason I don't have him on my list. I don't even have him on my honorable mentions because I just don't love the profile overall. But Andy, do you have any kind of different remarks about somebody like Trey Mancini?
No, in fact, it's the best comparison is a former teammate of his is Mark Reynolds. He doesn't give us the sort of confidence that we'd like to see in power bat first basemen without the power and the fact that they have Trumbo and Seth Smith. It shows us that neither Baltimore has confidence on him either. So I could totally see him getting 20 home runs if he gets 500 at bats, but I would even say 230, 240. That's probably where I would put him at.
Yeah, I do want to say that he has been fine in batting average in the minor leagues. Like, he's exhibited the ability to hit for 200 or 280 plus, but I just don't believe that's him. I could be wrong. Maybe I am shortchanging him a bit on the batting average. Maybe he's more of like a 270 guy or 280 guy, but I just don't see that quite yet in him. I've seen a good amount of him, and I just don't believe it quite yet. But Matt, give us a little bit of insight on Mancini and whether you think, I mean, you had him in your top 10, so you obviously believe him quite a bit. So,
He's a top 10 being proximity is the number one thing for me. As of right now, he's penciled in to get a lot of at-bats. Baltimore's famous for making late moves, but I don't know who they're going to get at this point. Napoli and Carter just fell off the list of available players for them. Yes, they got Trumbo back, but they still could use this platoon guy at the very worst with Seth Smith, and that's not the most exciting fantasy asset because if Mancini, if he's not your everyday first baseman or even DH, he doesn't offer any versatility, so he loses his value there. He has to play. He's going to get numbers by putting up volume, and that's kind of what I based it off of. The ceiling is not that high, clearly, but I think the floor is a little bit higher than you might be giving him credit for, but it's all dependent on the at-bats.
Yeah, and he's limited in terms of athleticism, in my opinion, too, which kind of caps his upside for me, but that's enough on Mancini. Let's see here. Who else did we kind of overlap on a little bit? Casey Gillespie. Thoughts on him, Andy?
So, again, there's the Tampa Bay first baseman who is a fringe guy for me. My big problem with him is the contact rate is so low. It's so low for a first baseman that we'd like to see. He's only had, 4 full years, but it's at that point, it's a fringe guy for me at best. The strikeouts high, the walk rate's okay, but I'd much rather have a Naylor or even a Diaz at that point.
Yeah, his proximity is closer, but the athleticism and the upside kind of seems capped, kind of like Mancini as well. But I do think he makes the majors this year, Gillespie. I think the fact that he's a switch hitter, he's okay. He's pretty solid defensively. He's not like the greatest defense. He's not going to win a Gold Glove out there, but he is solid.
I think he makes the majors this year. He also has, you know, shown some pretty incredible walk rates.
I'm an OBP whore, so that's why he's on my list.
last year in 293 at-bats in Montgomery, he had a 17% walk rate. That came with a 27% strikeout rate, which isn't great. But for the season between AA and AAA, you know, that put his batting eye somewhere in the .63 or .64 range. And that's not bad. That's actually up there with a few of the better batters in that first base. So I don't think he'll kill you in batting average. He's not going to be an asset, but I do think he's more of like a 260 guy going forward. The power is definitely going to play. I think he's more of a 25 home run, 20-plus home run guy. I don't want to say pencil in 25 quite yet, but I do think he's a 20 home run guy, plays pretty decent defense, can take a walk, which is kind of the Rays way at this point. They want to make sure that they have guys that can take a walk and play some defense. So I think that he's pretty safe to make the majors, and that's all you can really ask for. Again, ETA, I think he's going to come probably sometime in July this season. So if you're in a startup league and you need a guy at the end of the draft that might help you out this season, I think Gillespie is the guy to go with. Any other remarks there, Matt?
No, man, I think you got it. He's not going to blow your doors off, but he can be solid. So that's playable in deep leagues.
Absolutely. Let's see if am I missing anybody here before we get into the honorable
mentions.
I want to
touch on your boy. I want to bring up Lewin Diaz. I want to see what your thoughts are on him because you had him in your top 10. And I almost did. So he's my 11 guy.
Yeah, I'll be really fast. He has a really nice projectable body. He makes a ton of contact, and he has elite ISOs in the very limited time that he's played. I think he has a really good power profile, and he's a name that I don't think a lot of people are really on quite yet. It's going to take some time. But I think that, you know, when I look into him more and more, the more I kind of like him and the more I'm getting a little bit excited about him. Mind you, this is going to be a big year for him in terms of developing. I'm not quite sure how it's going to play out, but I'm willing, if I was in a league this year, you know, drafting, you know, a startup dynasty, I think he would be somebody that I would be willing to kind of take a gamble on. So, you know, he is a Minnesota prospect, and we know that those guys are not hitting at a outrageous rate right now. They're kind of right in the middle or kind of down in the dumps, depending on how you want to look at it. But he's a lefty. He's from the Dominican. He's only 20 years old, and I think that he could get a promotion to high A this year if things broke right for him. And I do think in the long term, he could be a 30-plus home run bat if things played right for him. Again, really good at putting the bat to the ball, which is what I really like to see as well. The walk rates could end up being a little bit worrisome at some point, but I think that he can demonstrate the ability to put the bat on the ball and, you know, won't kill you in OBP leagues once he's in top form. So I like Diaz.
Yeah, I agree with you. Not that this, like I said, he's my number 11 guy. I kind of shortchanged him in the Minnesota pod because I wasn't really – his 2014 and 2015 were so bad, but he was so young, and I'm willing to let it slide. He still had, but it's worth knowing, he had good plate skills, even though the average was subpar in those years too. He's a plus hit, plus power projection guy with good plate skills, and it's worth knowing. I mean, this isn't the end all be all, but he got $1.4 million from the Twins to sign, so that's a pretty good chunk of change for
and
a first baseman.
They need a first baseman for the love of God. Yep. They need a first baseman. So.
Yeah,
I mean,
badly.
It's not going to be this year or next year, but at some point. They're going to need one of these guys to hit, and it might be him at some point. They need to get some type of good fortune. So, Andy, do you have
real
any thoughts
question.
On – go ahead.
Go ahead. I was going to say a real quick question before we dig into the honorable mentions. If A.J. Reed was prospect eligible still because he barely missed a cut, where would he be for you on this list?
He would be number 3.
Okay, agreed. We're on the same page. Just real quick, that's all I wanted to know. Because, I mean, he's a buy-low guy right now, definitely. So.
Yeah, I would say most of his sort of appeal comes from the fact that he is a buy-low guy. I was really high on A.J. Reed last year. If we had had this conversation last year, he probably would have been my number one, followed by Greg Bird. But I have no problem having A.J. Reed high up on this list, again, if he had made the cut.
Absolutely. What do you think about Lewin Diaz, and how about you kind of tap into your honorable mentions as well there, Mr. Andy?
So Lewin Diaz and Bowers were my two honorable mentions. I got to say, you know, as a Latino, got to love those Latinos, and Lewin Diaz is everything you look for. Incredibly young, bats left, contact rate is good. He's got that sort of sexy swing that you look for. He's really going to power the ball out. And as you said, they wouldn't have given him $1.4 million if they didn't see something really special in this kid.
I just want to say, like, how racist would it be if I said, as an American, I like this guy? Because he's American. I'm just messing with you. But like, I guess if you want to give two, I'll give you two really good deep under the radar names. My first one is Brian Mundell, Colorado Rockies prospect. The thing that I am baffled by, one of my biggest mysteries in my entire life, is how Colorado Rockies have never developed a first base prospect since Todd Helton. It is crazy in that ballpark that they can't turn somebody with a good bat, good power into a first baseman. And I think they finally did that here. Mundell is a college catcher at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. So it's a decent baseball school, the Big West Conference. But he was original projection when they drafted him. He kind of had the offensive first backup catcher tag thrown on him because he was a good defensive catcher. But the Rockies saw something in the bat, moved him to first full time. Put a very successful season in a moderately tough hitting environment in Asheville. So he's a guy worth knowing. He's a little bit older, I mean, being a college prospect, but Brian Mundell is a name. And I like Yordan Alvarez. Since I gave you a little bit older guy, I want to go a little younger. Yordan Alvarez was a throw-in in the Josh Fields to L.A. trade last trade deadline. He's a first base only guy. Hit tool over power. But the hit tool is mighty. Limited time, and still hasn't played stateside. He's a Cuban guy. Limited time, he's hit 340 with an OBP, brushing the 480 mark with slugging 500. It's very limited. We're talking 45 at-bats. But the swing is very nice from the video I've seen, and he looks like a guy, but it's going to be a long time.
The guys that I have gone with my honorable mentions, I already mentioned DJ Peterson. I also put down Matt Theis, even though I'm not that big of a fan. I think he's a safe guy that will make the major league. So that's the reason I put him down as an honorable mention. The two guys that I'm really excited about, Will Craig and Peter Alonso. I think that the upside is really strong with both of these guys. You're probably not going to have to wait that long either. This is going to be big years for both of these guys. They're both a little bit older. They're going to be older for their competition. But I think if both of them reach double A this year, that's a really good sign. I know that's high expectations, but I can see these guys both having great years at single A and high A ball and making their way to double A at the end of the year, which would put them on a really fast track to the major league sometime in 2018. And that's what I'm really hoping for with both of those guys. So those are just a couple of the guys I like. Go ahead.
I like Alonso. I liked him out of UF, good power bat. He might be the first baseman for the future in New York. For me, I like him over Dom Smith long-term, but the proximity so far away. But the thing, I absolutely hate Will Craig. I loved him when he was at Wake Forest because, I mean, all he did was he just raked. He destroyed the league in AAA, in the ACC over there. But I think the lack of athleticism, pushes him to the bottom end of the first base spectrum. And I like the plate skills, but they didn't translate to pro ball. So that makes me a little worried. A lot of the websites, I dropped this a couple times in the team previews. BaseballDraftReport.com, my best resource website for the Major League Draft coverage. They comped him to A.J. Reed, right-handed A.J. Reed. I don't see it, but I can't fault it. I don't like the unathletic build from a right-handed player like that, right-handed hitter like that. I lean more toward the Trey Mancini, Casey Gillespie pool than I do A.J. Reed.
I love the plate skills for Mr. Craig here. I know I didn't really want to go that long on Craig, so you're making me kind of dig up things that I didn't want to dig up. But
sorry about that.
No, it's all good. He had a 37-41 strikeout to walk rate. That I love, and I always look for plate skills. I know he was old for the level, but I love that. I know the power wasn't there, but I do think he has 25-plus power at some point, and I just like him. You know, I think that he's somebody to monitor. He also could play another position, so keep that in mind. I think he was a third baseman at Wake Forest, if I'm not mistaken.
He was a third baseman last year for Pirates too, but there's no chance he stays there.
Yeah, so. I think he's more of a first baseman as well, but you know, there is that chance if they decide they want to go that route. But
he was a closer in college too. He's a third baseman and closer, which is interesting.
That is interesting. So the last thing we'll kind of talk about is, Matt, give us a few of those guys that I know we were kind of talking pre-show. We didn't want to rank these players as first basemen this year, but I know you have a couple of big names that are probably going to be moving to the first base position starting possibly this year.
Yeah, it's worth knowing this, guys, because, you know, things change all the time. Next year at this time, I think our top first base prospect will probably be Vlad Guerrero Jr., to be honest.
I'm really excited about him.
The Baseball America comp that I heard about him makes me a little tight in the groin region, what he can become. Obviously, everyone knows about Rafael Devers. I'm not the high guy on Devers, but he's going to be a good player in the outright there. I know I'm probably forgetting a few other guys you mentioned before. Zach Collins, Ryan McMahon, I'm willing to give his off year a pass. He played for Double A in Colorado, and the weird thing about them, they played zero home games all year. They rode the bus every game because their stadium wasn't ready. So anything he does in the minor leagues, riding the bus for every single game, I'm willing to cut you some slack. So that's not ideal. And I guess, like I said, I think we could be talking about Zach Collins at this position this time next year. There's a couple other guys in this mix. Renato Nunez from Oakland could be a late riser at this position too. So first base is ever kind of the catch-all for a lot of guys. This is ever changing. Anybody that I forgot?
I don't think so. I think you did a pretty good job of giving an all around view of who could be changing positions. So let's wrap this sucker up. Just so the listeners know, the episodes will not be this long on a consistent basis. Yeah, we were covering two positions this week because we wanted to catch up to the main show and everything. But I promise you, things will probably stay more than the 45 minute to an hour range. So if you've stayed with us this long, I really appreciate it. Again, it'll be shorter moving forward. So once again, Andy, give everybody your Twitter handle and let them know what you're possibly working on right now and what's in the works.
So hopefully on Friday, you're going to see from me a article detailing some NL offseason moves and how that has impacted a player's value coming through next year. And my Twitter handle is AAndersonFWFB. So hit me up with any questions. Seriously, I have no life. So just ask away.
And maybe some questions about how to build a computer as well, which is super impressive. I don't care how much you kind of dumb it down. It's super impressive, man.
If you can build Legos, that. You can build a computer. I promise.
I'm out then. Can't do Legos.
I can't do Legos either. Nor am I going to see the Batman Lego movie. Is that what's coming out?
Oh, I'm God, no. Doing that either. I hate superhero movies and I hate Legos, so I'm out.
Wow. There you go. You're not terrible. The audience.
Yeah, you're a terrible person, Matt. I mean, how dare you? How narcissistic can you be?
Follow me on Twitter and you can find out.
Where can people follow you on Twitter?
MDTompFWFB. Please, again, I stressed this earlier. I worked hard on the prospect prize this year. Me and Justin knocked them out, all 30 teams. Hell of an accomplishment, I think. And then I got all the 30-team write-ups with 10 prospects each. I'm going to have in the next week. I haven't finalized the date, and I also haven't finalized the number. But it's going to be somewhere from a top 100 to top 300 Dynasty prospect list coming out, so look for that to drop. Any suggestions on how to format that are welcome. Shoot me a message, and if you need me to help you rank players, shoot me a message on that. And I've got a couple of those this week. Those are interesting and always fun. Some of you guys play in some weird leagues, I'll just say that. But, hit me up on Twitter.
Yeah, don't be coming at us with that weird shit, all right? Like, I understand regular questions about stuff, but if you have, like, some thing where it's just so elaborate that it's not even fun, then you probably should second guess whether you should be playing in the league or not, because fantasy is supposed to be fun. All this really in-depth stuff just needs, maybe that's more appropriate for another site's bat signal. Don't want to promote anywhere, but just want to say. Anyways, you can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner FWFB as usual. Hit me up for questions, concerns, hate mail, anything that you need on there. I will continue to be doing the Monday show that comes out, the main podcast. I'll also be doing this show as well. You might also find me on some other shows at times, depending on schedule and such, but I'll be coming out with more articles as the season kind of gets closer here. I've been really busy with all of the team previews and all these other things that are going on. So I will be coming out with some written content for Friends with Fantasy Benefits as well. You can catch my daily matchups column on Baseball HQ this season. Make sure that you make that part of your DFS regimen when you're looking up research and such for that. Catch me on Fantasy Pros as a ranker, an expert ranker, as a couple of us have gotten. Yay, Matt.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. Also check out my raised blurbs on there as well. But please rate, review the show. I always please urge that. Try and get in some listener leagues if you'd like. Give us a 5-star review. We've been really going off season hard, and we've been trying to really get our listens up and trying to get some more listeners in. So if you're a new listener, appreciate you coming around, and please just kind of dive into everything we have to offer. We have a great website. We have a great group of guys. I'm really excited about this year. I'm more excited about this season than ever before. We're only getting better, so really check out all of our stuff that we have to offer. It's going to really help you win leagues, and it's probably the best kept secret in all of Fantasyland right now. So check it out. Anyways, for Andy, Matt, and myself, have a great offseason and crush your drafts. Every night I get-